Welcome to the debate. So, I have to say, I've been following the World Economic Forum, you know, for years. And usually it's a lot of polite nodding, right? Frozen breath, vague promises about sustainability. But 2026? I mean, this was not a conference, this was a collision.
That is putting it very mildly. Usually Davos is where the global elite kind of pat themselves on the back. This year, it really felt like two tectonic plates grinding against each other.
Exactly. On one side, you have this undeniable, just roaring energy, an American-led economic boom, and an AI revolution that has, I think, finally moved from hype to heavy industry. It feels like the engine is finally firing on all cylinders.
And on the other side, you have a terrified silence. Or, if you listen to people like Mark Carney, a warning that the engine is vibrating so hard it's about to shake the car apart. He didn't call it a transition, he called it a rupture.
And that is the split screen we are looking at today. Are we witnessing the dawn of a golden age, a pragmatic, results-oriented reset of the world? Or are we, as you suggest, entering a fractured, dangerous era where the rules just don't apply anymore? I'm the advocate, and I'm arguing that what we saw in Davos was the world finally waking up to reality and stripping away the polite fictions to focus on raw growth and security.
And I'm the dissenter, and I'll be arguing that what you call reality is actually just a sugar high, that we are mistaking volatility for vigor, and the fortress world we're building, one of tariffs, threats, and untested technology, is going to leave us poorer and, frankly, much more fragile than the GDP numbers suggest.
Well, let's start with those numbers because, you know, you can argue with philosophy, but it's hard to argue with a scoreboard. The data President Trump brought to the Swiss Alps was, frankly, staggering. We are 1 year into his second term, and, I mean, look at the board. Fourth quarter GDP at 5.4%, inflation crushed down to 1.6%.
The numbers are flashy. I'll grant you that.
They're more than flashy. They represent a fundamental shift in how the economy runs. Trump highlighted 52 stock market records in 12 months. But more importantly, he talked about the mechanism. It's not just business cycles. It's the slashing of 270,000 federal bureaucrats. It's the aggressive deregulation, cutting, what was it, 129 old rules for every new one? The argument here is that for the last decade, we've been paying this sort of bureaucracy tax on everything we do. Now that tax is gone. We are prioritizing cheap energy and what Alex Karp from Palantir calls market value honesty.
Market value honesty is such a seductive phrase. It sounds so clean. But let's peel that back a bit. When you strip away regulation and bureaucracy that quickly, you aren't just cutting red tape, you're cutting these shock absorbers of society. And this is where Mark Carney's speech really struck a nerve for me. He used that famous metaphor from Vaclav Havel about the green grocer. The idea that for years we've been living within a lie, you know, pretending the old rules-based order was working when it just wasn't.
Which is exactly my point. The old order was a lie.
But Carney's conclusion isn't that we're liberated, it's that we're exposed. He says we are moving to a world of fortresses. When you rely on coercion rather than cooperation, everyone builds walls. Trump's 39% tariff on Switzerland, a neutral country, an ally, just to fix a trade deficit, that sends a message that no one is safe. And as Carney noted, a world of fortresses is inherently less efficient. You lose the synergies of trade. You lose a safety net of alliances. You might have a high GDP this quarter, but you are burning the furniture to heat the house.
I see why you'd frame it that way, especially if you're looking at it from the perspective of a traditional diplomat. But let me give you a different perspective. The engineer's perspective. This wasn't just a political summit. The real energy in that room came from the tech sector. You had the titans of the industry, Jensen Huang from NVIDIA, Satya Nadella from Microsoft, and they weren't talking about chatbots or writing funny poems anymore. They were describing a platform shift as significant as the Industrial Revolution.
Right, but we've heard about the revolution for 3 years now.
But the tone has changed. Nadella talked about diffusion. I mean, think about what that word implies. When electricity was new, it was a luxury. Now it's diffused, it's everywhere, it's cheap, and you don't even think about it. Nadella is saying AI is reaching that point. The cost of tokens per watt, which is basically the cost of buying intelligence, is just dropping through the floor. It's becoming utility. And when intelligence becomes as cheap as electricity, you generate surplus everywhere. That's the golden age thesis. The technology stack is so powerful, it just overrides the geopolitical messiness you're worried about.
See, that's where I have to kind of pump the brakes. You're assuming that because the technology is cheap, the implementation is easy. But if you listen to the Scaling AI panel, the mood was actually quite somber. The message wasn't full speed ahead. It was, now comes the hard part.
The hard part is just execution. I mean, that's solvable.
Is it, though? Is it really? Roy Jacobs, the CEO of Philips, gave this perfect example regarding healthcare. He said, look, human doctors are about 82% accurate in complex diagnoses. We accept that. But if an AI is 90% accurate, we reject it. We demand 95% or 99%. That gap, that is the trust gap. It's not a technical problem. It's a human one. You can drop the cost of tokens to zero, but if a hospital system can't trust the algorithm or if the nurses refuse to change their workflow, well, that surplus you're talking about never materializes.
I think that's temporary friction. Look at what's happening where the rubber meets the road. Look at Aramco. Ayman Nasser came out and explicitly stated they realized $6 billion in value last year, and half of that was directly from AI.
Aramco has unlimited money and 90 years of clean data. They are the exception, not the rule.
But look at how they did it. They're using these intelligent earth models. Basically, they are using AI to see through miles of solid rock and identify productive zones in oil fields that human geologists missed for decades. They bumped their productive zone identification from 80% to 90%. That isn't just efficiency, that is finding new assets that didn't exist before. That's physical value. And then you have Ryan McKerney from Visa talking about agent to commerce.
Which sounds dystopian, by the way.
It sounds efficient. Think about it. Right now, if you want to book a trip or buy a complex part for your business, you spend hours searching, comparing, clicking. Agentic commerce means you have an AI agent that knows your preferences, goes out into the digital marketplace, negotiates, and executes the transaction for you. Mick and Ernie called this a must-win battle for Visa. This is going to revolutionize small business. It's like giving every shop owner a procurement department of 50 people. That is how you overcome the trust gap. You make the utility so undeniable that people have to use it.
But you are glossing over the foundation required for that. Julie Sweet from Accenture made this point beautifully. She said 90% of companies do not have the data foundation to run these agents. Their data is unstructured, it's messy, it's in silos. If you put a super intelligent agent on top of bad data, you don't get efficiency. You get garbage in, garbage out at the speed of light. And Alex Karp from Palantir pointed out an even bigger bottleneck in government.
Karp is usually the optimist.
He was realistic here. He said the problem isn't the software, it's the talent. You can't find technical talent that can pass a drug test and get a security clearance to work for the government. So you have these massive agencies that want to modernize, but they literally cannot hire the people to plug the machine in. That's the hard part I'm talking about. The golden age narrative assumes institutions are malleable, like software code. But institutions are stubborn. They are made of people and unions and regulations and habits. I think we are going to see a massive collision between the speed of AI and the slowness of human institutions.
I don't disagree there will be friction. But Karp also said that market value honesty is coming whether those institutions like it or not. The efficiency gap will get so wide that the stubborn institutions will simply go bankrupt or be bypassed. Which brings us to the second massive area of debate. And this one is even more volatile. Geopolitics.
The rupture itself?
Or the reset. Look, the America First approach we saw outlined by Trump is brutal. I admit that. But it is also rational.
Rational? He threatened to buy Greenland? He treated a sovereign territory like it was a distressed asset in a real estate deal.
But look at the context. Trump frames Greenland as a golden dome for defense. He's looking at the map and seeing the Arctic opening up, seeing Russian expansion and saying, we need that strategic choke point. And he criticized Denmark for spending only 1% on defense while the U.S. protects them. To him, that's not imperialism. That's just closing a security loophole.
To the rest of the world, it looks like a hostile takeover.
But consider his approach to drug prices. This was the most fascinating anecdote of the summit for me. He described sitting down with Macron and telling him France needs to double its drug prices.
Which is insane. Why would an American president want French drug prices to go up?
Because
For 30 years, the U.S. consumer has been subsidizing global R&D. We pay top dollar, funding the innovation, while Europe uses price controls to pay pennies. Trump told Macron, match our prices or I slap 100% tariff on French wine. And guess what? He claims they agreed. He claims this levels the playing field so U.S. prices can drop by 90%. That is a tangible benefit to the American citizen derived from leveraging American power. That is America first in practice, right?
It's a tangible benefit gained by shattering trust. That's the problem. Mark Carney's whole point was that hegemons cannot continually monetize their relationships. You can only shake down your friends so many times before they stop being your friends.
But are they leaving? NATO spending went from 2% to 5% after the threats.
They aren't leaving yet, but they are hedging, and that is dangerous. We see Canada signing strategic partnerships with China. Why? Because if the U.S. is going to tariff Switzerland 39% just to fix a balance sheet, then Canada or Germany or Japan needs a backup plan. This destroys that web of connections that keeps the world stable. Carney warns that a world of fortresses creates friction. Trade becomes harder. Capital flow becomes harder.
But the capital is flowing. It's flowing to the U.S., $18 trillion in investment.
It's flowing there because it's the last safe haven, not because the system is healthy. But let's look at the financial plumbing. The finance panel at Davos raised a terrifying point about fragmentation. If every region builds a fortress, U.S. financial rails, Chinese financial rails, European rails, you lose the efficiency of the global system. And worse, you invite volatility. We aren't just talking about trade wars. We're talking about the weaponization of the dollar. If you make enemies of everyone, eventually they stop using your currency.
Vang's counterargument is that energy is the ultimate currency and the U.S. has won that game. The drill baby drill policy has gas under $2 a gallon. Meanwhile, the tech companies are building their own nuclear plants to feed those data centers. The U.S. is becoming an energy fortress. In a world of chaos, industry goes where the energy is cheap and the borders are secure. That is why the investment is here. It's not just safety, it's competitive advantage.
But you can't build a healthy economy inside a fortress if the society outside the walls or even inside the walls is tearing itself apart. And that leads us to the social cost. You're painting a picture of a boom, but Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, painted a picture of a police state.
He certainly didn't hold back.
No. He described masked men and federalized National Guard troops patrolling American cities. He talked about the rule of Don replacing the rule of law. He mentioned books being banned and CEOs wearing knee pads, a visceral image selling out their values just to get access to the administration. If the Golden Age requires the militarization of domestic life and the suspension of civil liberties, is that a price we should be willing to pay?
I think the advocate's position, and Trump's argument, is that the liberty Newsom defends was actually chaos. You can't have a free society if you get mugged walking to work. Trump's claim is that economic security is national security. He says crime is down, cities are clean, and business is returning because he was willing to use force. It's a trade-off, absolutely. But look at the class dynamics. This is really interesting.
The revenge of the vocational class?
Exactly. Alex Cart pointed this out. In the AI economy, the people who are winning aren't the philosophy grads or the mid-level marketing managers. It's the technicians, the people who can build the data center, fix the robot, weld the pipeline. Their wages are skyrocketing. Trump claimed real incomes are up $3,000 to $5,000. He's arguing that this boom is actually restoring the middle class, specifically the working class, by valuing physical reality over knowledge economy fluff.
But there is a massive contradiction in his economic policy regarding that working class, specifically with housing.
How so?
Well, Trump says he wants to protect the American dream by banning institutional investors, Wall Street, from buying single-family homes. That sounds great. It's populist. But he also wants to protect the home values of existing owners. He explicitly said, I'm not going to hurt people who have $500,000 houses. But you cannot make housing affordable for the young plumber while keeping housing expensive for the old retiree. Those are mutually exclusive goals. He's trying to manipulate the market to please everyone, and that usually leads to a bubble.
It's a tightrope walk for sure. But banning the hedge funds from the housing market is a massive structural change that theoretically shifts power back to the individual buyer.
if it works. But my biggest worry isn't the housing market. It's the speed of collapse. The finance panel discussed this, the digital bank run. We saw it with SVB years ago, but it's faster now. In a world where political norms are shattered, where the president is threatening the Federal Reserve chair and governors are openly defying the White House, trust is paper thin. In a digital world, trust can evaporate in seconds. You are building this high-growth economy on a foundation of social nitroglycerin. If a panic starts with the speed of today's AI-driven finance, there is no backstop.
And yet, the market keeps hitting records. The investors seem to believe the fortress will hold.
Investors are great at pricing risk, but they are terrible at pricing ruin.
That's a fair warning. But let's bring this to a close because we really are looking at two different horizons here.
We are. My takeaway from Davos 2026 is that we are sleepwalking into disaster. We are dazzled by the 5.4% growth and the shiny AI demos, but we are ignoring the structural damage. We are alienating our allies, we are militarizing our streets, and we are trusting our healthcare and economy to algorithms that haven't bridged the trust gap. We are entering Carney's world of fortresses, poor, isolated, and incredibly fragile. When the rupture hits, all that surplus is going to vanish very, very quickly.
And my takeaway is that the rupture was necessary. The old world, the world of polite decline, of paying for Europe's defense while they regulated our tech companies, that world was the illusion. What we saw in Davos was the West, led by America, finally deciding to compete to win. Yes, it's abrasive. Yes, market value honesty is brutal. But it's delivering cheap energy, secure borders, and a technological revolution that is finally showing up in the bank accounts of regular people. The hard part you're worried about? That's just the friction of the old world dying.
Or the friction of the new world failing to launch.
And that is the question for 2026. Whether we are entering a golden age of liberation or a global rupture of isolation, well, I suppose the listener will have to decide which side of the fortress wall they want to stand on.
Indeed. And let's hope the walls hold.
Thank you for joining the debate.